Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Who controls AI today on Advanced? Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining me and my co-host Heather in the studio today for our September technology article. Heather, it's not actually the first day of our September technology article. It's our second day. Can you tell our listeners what our article is called and what it's about?
So our article from day one is called AI for All, and it basically is discussing the balance of who controls these big AI corporations, from what I recall. So it's basically corporations versus smaller corporations and everybody else, basically.
And who gets a piece of the pie? Or universities or normal people.
Big corporations versus everybody else, it seems like.
Yeah, we kind of talked yesterday about how people picture AI. Like, I picture my phone when I picture AI because that's how I usually use AI. You might picture your desktop computer or something. But the image we were given at the beginning of the article that was in yesterday's lesson was a very different picture. We were basically given a description of like a giant server computing facility kind of in a desert with all kinds of air conditioning, cooling towers, and it was sucking down more electricity than all of the towns around it. And so it was this huge, high cost, resource intensive thing that was necessary to train the AI so that it worked properly. And we were basically told that this created a problem. They actually used this term, like an exponential moat.
Yes.
Yeah. And that the idea there was that there was a gap between the people who already had the resources to produce the AI and the people who wanted to get them. Mm-hmm. And the gap was just there because, now you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong here, the productivity, the capability of the AI was doubling every 9 months?
Yes, I believe it was doubling every 9 months.
And the resources it was using was doubling every 12 months.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, we didn't really talk about this yesterday, but that does mean it's improving in efficiency, but it's also improving in cost.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you are waiting to start an AI company, stop waiting because
the
people with AI companies are already getting ahead of you. Getting ahead of you, so much further ahead of you that you might not be able to catch up. At least that was sort of the general concern here. And then they went on to talk about centralization versus democratization. Centralization, of course, meaning there's like sort of a group of people who are making all the decisions versus democratization, which is like democracy where
it's everybody.
Right. Has access, et cetera, et cetera. And the idea there was that if everybody has access, then you're able to have more innovation, more novel or creative uses for it, things like that. It was described to us as being preferable, but also something that was difficult to achieve because of this moat, this gap between those who had access to it. I guess the real gap there is between not so much like who has the app on their phone. The gap is who has the server farm.
Yeah, who has the dystopian server farm.
The computing power to decide what the AI does, how it does it, who it does it for, how much it costs to get it to do it, things like that. So it's not so much about being able to access it on your phone. It's more about being able to determine what it will do, what kinds of development it will pursue, that sort of thing. Yeah. So that brings us to, I mean, basically there yesterday we were talking about, what would you say, access, the fairness of it, right?
Yeah, basically who, I think you said this earlier to me in the office, pay to play, like who has the money to control these systems and then who doesn't? And how does that, how do those implications affect the consumer potentially?
Yeah, Heather's referring to an English saying, you have to pay to play, which just means like it's available to everybody, but you have to pay for it. There's a cost to using it, which I guess means it's not really available to everybody. It's sort of available to everybody. But in English, we have a lot of different sayings that are similar to that. Like you'll hear people say the cost of doing business,
mm-hmm.
which basically means like it's a necessary expense if you want this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the idea. It's similar to saying there's no free lunch,
yeah.
right? Which is another English saying that means you can't get anything for free. You have to ultimately pay for it, especially mm-hmm. if it's worth having. So there's sort of this thinking there that was kind of represented yesterday. But today we're going to be looking at a different dimension. We're going to be talking about the environmental dimension,
mm-hmm.
Which presumably is the environmental cost of these huge amounts of resource that are required to run the back end or the computing power behind the AI. We're going to do three readings today. Listeners, if you have your September magazine, I would encourage you to open it up to the technology article or get a magazine because it's the easiest way to support us and it's good for your learning experience. So, without further delay, let's get Campbell to read our first section for today, which is under the title Environmental Reckoning. Let's do that now.
Environmental reckoning. There is also a physical cost. Training one frontier model can require as much electricity as a small city uses in a year. Cooling towers demand enormous volumes of water, and while much of it is recycled, siting matters. In water-scarce regions, the strain can be significant. The carbon footprint is similarly uneven. A model trained on grids dominated by coal or gas produces orders of magnitude more emissions than one trained on grids powered by renewables. In this sense, the AI sustainability debate is really an energy debate. Models are not green or dirty by themselves. They are as green or as dirty as the electrons that feed them.
All right. So, Campbell, thank you very much for that reading. Campbell just told us that there is a physical cost. Now, what was the cost before? Would you say an emotional cost, a mental cost, a social cost, maybe?
Maybe a financial cost, like a very literal sense. That's how I took it. But yeah, like...
Because you have to have the money.
Yeah, you have right? to have the money to get certain aspects of the AI.
Maybe a time cost as well.
Sure.
So you had to be ahead in terms of time and money and resources.
Yes.
But then the consequence of that was a social consequence where not everybody could have access. But they're pointing out here that there is also an environmental cost
mm-hmm.
to all of these resources being dedicated to AI. And presumably that's a physical cost, as in like you're cutting down trees
mm-hmm.
or...
Using a lot of water.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Fossil fuel. So it says training one frontier model. Now, again, frontier was sort of the edge of the known. And so we're talking about like a groundbreaking, innovative model here that's doing something new. And it can require as much electricity as a small city uses in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun. This is going to be a real problem, you know. Cooling towers demand enormous volumes of water, and while much of it is recycled, siting matters. What do they mean by siting there? Like seeing something or locating something?
I feel like it's regarding locating more water to utilize.
Yeah. I think one of the things that stands out in my mind is when they were describing the data center,
mm-hmm.
they mentioned it was on the edge of a desert
plateau. Oh, yes.
So I think the issue is...
Where's
there
the water
are probably
in the desert?
Some advantages
mm-hmm.
to having it located in places where it's hard to get huge amounts of water. Like there's one of the things I know from sort of my life experience is that when you live by the ocean,
mm-hmm.
you have access to a lot of water, but salt in the water, in the air, kind of corrodes metal and is really rough on stuff, right? So if you have high humidity or if you have things like that, it's not so good for your electronics.
So that's why a lot of these corporations are in deserts, because it's less likely to be humid there.
But there's less local water available there. So
yeah, so it's like a give and take. So because there's less water, they have to locate this water and bring it in. And then
they continue on, like in the next sentence, to say, in water-scarce regions, the strain can be significant. And presumably that's because either the city's people get the water or the data center gets the water. There isn't enough for both, I guess, is kind of the tension. So the people don't like the data center because the cost of water just went up, that sort of thing.
Sure.
I assume the same is also true for electricity, right?
Yes.
They say the carbon footprint is similarly uneven. Do you know what they mean by a carbon footprint there?
I believe a carbon footprint is the impact on the environment off of how much something you were using. So I know people criticize people who take lots of, like celebrities who take lots of flights because their carbon footprint is very big. So their impact, because of the actions that they are taking, has an impact on the environment.
If we were to explore where that word kind of came from in that usage, I think it comes from the idea of using fossil fuels. Because fossil fuels, sort of more technically are hydrocarbons, right? And so every time you're using these hydrocarbons, you're sort of leaving, if not a physical remain, you're leaving like a legacy. And so a carbon footprint would be like how much carbon was burned effectively. How much hydrocarbon was burned for you to get to the place you are. So that, doesn't just include the fuel you're using. It also includes the fuel that's used to make the machine that you use to burn the fuel, all the way down the line, all included. That would be the carbon footprint. And so they're saying here that that is similarly uneven. Why is it uneven? And what do we mean by uneven? Uneven means it's not the same in all places. So here, if a model, an AI model, is trained on a grid that's a power grid, an electric grid, trained in an area where all of the electricity is generated by coal or gas, then the carbon footprint will be a lot larger. The term they use is orders of magnitude.
Yes, and that is if something is in order of magnitude greater or smaller than something else, it is 10 times greater or smaller in size or amount. It's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah. But nonetheless, if you're basically located in a place where the electricity is produced by coal or gas, then that electricity creates a much bigger carbon footprint for your facility than if you're in an area where most of the electricity is coming from renewables, which would mean solar power or hydroelectric power or wind power or something like that. I suppose even nuclear power. And that's why you hear in the news that some of these big tech companies are like working towards nuclear reactors to power their facilities, right? Because it allows them to sort of produce the electricity they need without creating a burden on the local power grid, things like that. So they're working on ways to get around this problem. But nonetheless, this inequality kind of exists. There's going to be tension over water we have now, tension over electricity. In this case, it says the AI sustainability debate is really an energy debate. Models are not green or dirty by themselves. They are as green or as dirty as the electrons that feed them. What do they mean by the electrons that feed them? That's a total science question. I don't know if I doubt that your average person would have any idea what they mean by this.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not very sure either.
So electricity is electrons that are flowing from one place to another place. So the electrons here is like a way of saying electricity. So your energy is not, or pardon me, your AI is not clean or dirty. It's only as clean or dirty as the electricity it uses, because producing that electricity, producing those electrons, is the thing that will be clean or dirty. Okay, interesting. What a tricky way of putting things. That brings us to our second reading. What efficiency cannot buy? Campbell, help us out.
What efficiency cannot buy? Efficiency alone will not solve this problem. Each generation of chips gets faster. each architecture more optimized. But the aggregate demand continues to rise faster than the gains. Every watt saved at the micro level is consumed by the macro expansion of ambition. If anything, efficiency makes the arms race worse, because it lowers the cost per experiment and encourages even more experiments. The result is a treadmill. More compute, more power, more cost, more centralization.
All right. So what efficiency cannot buy? Any idea what it can't buy, Heather? We've just heard Campbell sort of read for us, and we're told that efficiency alone will not solve the problem.
Yes.
So each generation of chips gets faster, each architecture more optimized, but the aggregate demand continues to rise faster than the gains. I don't even know if I know what they're talking about here at all.
Yeah.
I've heard Campbell read it. We're going to have to break this down into little bits to figure out what they are saying. Efficiency alone will not solve this problem. Okay, fair enough. So you can't just get more efficient. The thing I immediately think about when I hear that is basically Chinese AI. So I don't know if you remember this number of months ago. I can't remember. I think it's called DeepSeek.
Yes,
do you remember
that name,
DeepSeek?
Yes, I do remember hearing about DeepSeek, and there was a lot of drama around it, but I don't recall exactly what the issue was.
Well, you basically have these big AI companies that are located in the US or whatever, and they're running these huge things. There's like trade-related issues over acquiring chips and things like that, various political issues. So the company in China was basically forced to work with more limited access to computing resources, but managed to find a way to basically through software, developing the software instead of the hardware infrastructure, developed a way to come up with a comparable product, something that worked, you know, well, even without the same sort of resources. So basically the efficiency was much better in terms of resource use. But what they're saying here is that sort of innovation is not going to be enough to solve this whole problem. So they go on to say then, each generation of chips gets faster, each architecture more optimized. So each generation of chips, it means like when they produce newer computer chips, they're more efficient. The architecture is how you organize those chips to work together, I assume. And it becomes more efficient, but the aggregate demand continues to rise faster than the gain. So the question here is, what is this aggregate demand? And that is how much people want to use the AI put together. So what they're, I think, effectively arguing is that even though they're getting more efficient, even though they're building more and more quickly, people want more than they can build. So the demand for AI is growing so much faster than the supply of AI that we have a problem. So it doesn't matter how efficient you are, it doesn't matter how quickly you build. If you can't build quickly enough to keep up with demand, there's going to be a shortage and not everybody's going to have access. I think that's effectively what they're saying. As they continue on, they say, every watt saved. You're familiar with watts?
No. I've heard it before. Is it light?
Oh, yeah, in light bulbs. Yeah, you're right. You know, like your light bulb will say like a 10-watt bulb. Or
yes.
Traditionally, it'd be like 60-watt, 100-watt, right? Yeah, it's like a measurement of electricity.
Okay, that's
so
what
when
I was
you
thinking.
Have a 10-watt bulb, it's like using 10 watts of electricity to light that bulb. So, okay, yeah, that's right. So every time you save a watt at the micro level, so you make something a little bit more efficient, it is consumed by the expansion of ambition. They say macro expansion. So
yes,
micro watt saving means you make something a little more efficient.
And then macro is the antonym?
Like, yeah.
The opposite.
Of micro, yeah.
Yeah, so large in range or extent. So opposite of micro.
Exactly. So it's like one person is using a certain amount of AI. You make that a little more efficient, but five more people start using AI.
Yes.
So the savings you've made just got swallowed by all the new people who are trying to use the AI. So if anything, efficiency makes the arms race worse because it lowers the cost per experiment and encourages more people to do experiments. So the only complex part there is the arms race.
Yes. So that is a phrase that is used to describe a race between competing nations to do something. So, yeah, that's basically
competition.
It. Yeah, it's a competition.
The competition, yeah. Where I guess the idea is like I build something bigger and better and then you have to build something bigger and better.
Mm-hmm.
So we're more focused on building bigger and better than on the usefulness of it.
Yes.
Maybe, for example. So this competition is getting worse and worse because every time they make AI more able to do things, people want to use it
mm-hmm.
more.
And it seems like they use AI for things that are so unnecessary. Like we have like, I will admit I use AI for work, but then
yeah.
like I also see things like you can use AI to make songs. You can use AI to edit you with your favorite celebrity and all sorts of interesting
yeah.
things that like you feel as consumers, you sometimes feel compelled to utilize, but you don't think about like the impact and everything that goes into doing silly little things. So
somebody's thinking about it because they're on a treadmill.
Mm.
So what they're saying in our last sentence here is the result is a treadmill, which is kind of like if you are on one of those running machines, you can't just stop running. You have to stop the machine before you stop running or you're going to fly off the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on the treadmill, you have to keep running. And they're kind of comparing running here to the race, the arms race, the
yes.
competition to build more computing power.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't stop building computing power because more people are trying to use it. You can't build it fast enough to meet the demand of the people who are trying to use it. So there are problems. We're going to look actually not at how to solve those problems in the last reading. The last reading is under the title, What to Demand. And so it's kind of encouraging a call to political action
mm-hmm.
for people who are not happy with this situation. Let's have a look at it with Campbell now.
What to demand. If we want to avoid a future in which AI's destiny is set by the boardrooms of three companies and the ministries of two superpowers, we need to treat compute as a public concern. That means demanding 1. Transparency about who owns and operates the largest clusters. 2. Auditability of usage. What models are being trained for what purposes? 3. Shared infrastructure, funded publicly or through consortia, so that researchers and smaller firms can experiment without asking permission from trillion-dollar corporations. 4. Energy accountability, requiring operators to disclose not just aggregate consumption, but sources, emissions, and water footprints in real time. The debate should not stop at which model is safest or which dataset is fair. It should extend to who controls the machines that make the models possible in the first place. If history teaches anything, it is that when power centralizes at this scale, accountability rarely follows.
Okay, so we know this is a political call to action because they say if we want to avoid a future in which AI's destiny is set by the boardrooms of three companies and the ministries of two superpowers, so they're talking there about two governments,
mm-hmm.
right? We need to treat compute here being like the computer processing,
mm-hmm.
as a public concern, like a public utility. We have to be worried about it and active in the way it is controlled.
Yes.
That means demanding. Oh, that's the call to action. We have to, I guess, call our political representatives and demand things. Yes. So the first one is transparency about who owns and operates the big ones,
mm-hmm.
the largest clusters. Auditability of usage, meaning we need somebody to watch and oversee and create reports on what models are being trained and for what purposes.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is shared infrastructure, so funded publicly or through consortia. Consortia there, like consortiums, but in the plural.
Okay.
So
a consortium.
What are they? Yeah.
Yeah, so a consortium is a group of companies or organizations who are working together to do something.
Presumably here they're saying like the government, independent watchdog organizations and the companies themselves would be like a group that oversees this so that researchers and smaller firms can experiment without asking permission from trillion-dollar corporations. And number four was energy accountability, requiring operators, that's the operators of these computing centers, to disclose not just the aggregate or total consumption, but the sources, the emissions, and the water footprint. That water footprint will be similar to that carbon footprint, how much water you are using in real time. My goodness. They go on to say the debate should not stop at which model is safest or which data set is fair. It should extend to who controls the machines that make the models possible in the first place. Then tells us, Heather, that history teaches us something. What does it teach us?
It says if history teaches anything, is that when power centralizes at this scale, accountability rarely follows.
Yes. There you go. So another thing to keep you up at night and keep you worried, Heather. Thank you, Advanced Radio, for that. Yeah. No, I think it'll you know, there's no stopping it now.
No, I think AI it's become so big.
Yeah. Let's hope for the best. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us for our September technology article. We'd love to hear your thoughts and feelings about this subject on our social media. So feel free to join the conversation there. And otherwise, I guess we're going to sign off. Hey, Heather, we're out of time. So, friends, goodbye for now. I'm Simon.
And I'm Heather.
Saying see you later.
Bye-bye.